Welcome to the Matt Hummer Podcast, episode 95. It's not just episode 95, though. It's also the end of year special. We are recording this about a week or so in advance, just before the future staff Christmas party. So we're not going to cover any breaking news or anything like that. It's all going to be about the year that was. And I've got a full deck of supporting joint lead cast characters with me today. I know. Sorry, correcting myself as I went along. I'm Mo, and with me on the red mic at present, putting the gloom in doom, it is the one and only online editor of Metal Hammer, Miss Alice Patillo. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. currently kind of sharing the red mic and yellow mics because one of our mics is broken, so we need a new one. Is the goth queen herself, deputy editor of Metal Hammer, Miss Eleanor Goodman. How are you, Elle?
Hi, Merle. I'm very excited about Christmas and very excited about all the gothic joy it brings.
It sure does. To my right, on the yellow mic, is the master of all things evil and vile. And he likes some weird metal bands as well.
That is actually my official title.
It's the reviews editor of Metal Hammer himself, Mrs. Jonathan Seltzer. How are you?
Very seasonal in the fact that I have a stinking cold that won't go away.
Wonderful. That's what we like to hear. Please stay away from me. This is a very enclosed environment. We're going to be running through all the greatest and best and coolest things that happened across 2019. How would you guys sum up 2019 for metal? Has it been a good year, prolific year? What do you kind of think it's been for the scene?
I always judge how good a year is by when it comes to voting for albums of the year, like how big my shortlist is. This wasn't one of the shortest shortlists. It wasn't one of the biggest. I don't think it was the greatest year we've had for a long while, but I think there's been loads of, there's still been loads of good stuff. I think I had a shortlist of about 25 to 30 records.
But that's pretty solid.
In previous years, it's been like I've had a shortlist of up to 40, and it's one of those years where you couldn't put your money on what's going to be the album of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously we kind of talked about this last week, Ellen and I, but in terms of kind of critics polls and stuff, you could probably have a fairly good idea of some of the albums that would end up in the upper half of kind of end of year lists, because if nothing else, it's been a very big year for releases in terms of big bands. We've had a Tool album after 13 years, a Ramstein album after 10 years, even the Slipknot albums come after 5 years. You've had a big Korn album and an Opeth album, like we've got loads and loads and loads of stuff going on. I think it's been a good year for a lot of underground bands, especially kind of veteran underground bands putting out some, you know, near career best material. Yeah, I think we should maybe jump straight into it by looking at the top 10 albums officially voted for by the good contributors of Metal Hammer magazine. You can pick up the latest issue now to read the full list of the 50 albums of the year. It's in our big Rev tribute issue, loads of other stuff in there as well. But we're going to run through the top 10 right now, starting at 10. We had Cult of Luna with A Dawn to Fear, which is not really an album we've talked about on here much.
No.
Is that one you've been into, Celts?
Yes. I think Cult of Luna, they're one of those bands that it's almost easy to kind of start taking for granted because they've been around for so long. And also because they're so consistently good. Like, you know, they've kind of created their own world over the course of, like, you know, last 15, 20 years. There's loads of bands, and they totally influence the scene. Mm. Like, when people talk about post-metal, they basically generally mean talking about post-Cult of Luna or Neurosis, but it's I think it's Cult of Luna that most bands have kind of like taken off from. So it's easy to forget the individual albums in the face of all of that. And this one wasn't quite as conceptual as the other ones they've done. But then you go back to it, and I was wondering where I was going to place this, and I went back and listened to it, and it's like, no, it's actually totally immersive, totally magical, totally heartfelt, and just has its own kind of environment. All their albums always feel like a bit of a pilgrimage, and this was totally upheld, you know, how good they, you know, upheld their legacy. Mm. I thought,
yeah, I think that's very fairly put, and you know, it broke in just at 10, which is, to me, I think they're one of those bands where if they're not on your radar You know, you're probably not likely to necessarily get into them on this album specifically. I mean, would you call it like a good gateway album for people that maybe haven't got into Cult of Luna before?
I think so. I mean, like I said, I think all their albums are fairly consistent. There's not, they've all got their own tone, but I think every album is like an aspect of their different kind of facet and aspect of the world. I think any album, really, The Beyond's a good one as well. But like I said, this one wasn't quite so conceptual, but it doesn't feel like it's missing a dimension.
Yeah.
It felt really heartfelt.
Cool. Well, that was our number 10. At number 9, we had, I think, in my opinion, one of the greatest bands in the world today, Baroness with Golden Grey. Elle, what did you think of this album when it first came out? We thought it was a double album, but it technically wasn't, was it?
No, we thought it was a double album because we got the track listing through and there were so many tracks on it.
And the kind of two-colour coding thing as well.
Yeah, but no, it was a single album. And I think it was difficult to know, really, whether it was going to be a continuation of the last one or whether they were kind of going to go heavier or where they were going to go with the sound. It's just a really solid Baroness album, I would say.
Yeah.
Just...
It takes a while to click in, doesn't it? Because it is really long and expansive, where Purple had some real like immediacy to it and kind of, I felt like, really got those emotional gut punches in right from the start. It takes a while for Golden Grey to really kind of seep under your skin and drag you under it. It's paced quite interestingly as well, because kind of the heavier, catchier, more obvious stuff is quite far into the record. It takes quite a while for it all to kind of pop up and really grab you.
I have always sort of seen them as a band that you have to get into. And I never listen to a Baroness album and go, now this is my favourite thing and it's really catchy and I love it.
Oh, that's interesting.
It just doesn't.
So that's exactly what I did with Purple. I was like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Well,
this is one
like
of my albums of the year.
Shock Me, I guess, where you're like, yeah, that.
Chlorine and Wine as well on that album.
Yeah, I guess I see your point. But I think just generally, they're a band for me that I like to watch because you can sort of see the warmth and talent in the way that they perform. And I think I only really started to attach to them after I saw them perform. So, and I do find their production a bit weird, like the way they do that. It's sort of the kind of more old school production and I struggle with that sometimes. Like it's a bit of a hurdle for me. I'm used to probably hearing more clear modern day production, which isn't necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a different thing. They're very distinctive in what they do.
It was very I noticed a few people talking about the production and how kind of compressed it was in it, and I think with Baroness I do sometimes wonder if they could benefit more from production that would let their music breathe a bit, because it can be so layered and kind of emotionally dense sometimes. I do wonder if squeezing it through that kind of weird, like almost like dirty little mix kind of does them a lot of favors. But
yeah, I'd like to hear it mixed a different way to see, because I think I just instinctively respond a bit negatively to it. But actually and maybe that's one of the reasons why I like seeing them live more, or like it clicks with me more live, because it's sort of there. Don't know.
I think your opinion, people's opinions of Baroness also depends to some extent on where they started with them. Like obviously I started with Red Album, and like Raise on Pinion is so catchy. And you know, I found Blue Record a bit hard to get into. It was a bit more proggy. Took me a little bit longer to find my way into it. And then, you know, the next album, Yellow and Green, was so sprawling after that, and had so many new kind of flavors to it. Like that one, that was a double album, so I found I had to like conquer it like side by side. I was like, okay, I've got this next songs, not sure about the next batch. And then I got into the next batch, and then it's like, I just felt like I had to like inch my way into that one. But I just think there's such a warmth and a heartfelt emotion on the records these days.
Warmth is probably the first word I would use when it comes to Baroness. Like this kind of like life affirming, like heart pulling, like emotional bands. And I think, you know, they always had that in them, but I think after what they went through before the Purple album with the bus crash, I just feel like they're one of those bands I'm always rooting for, like always wanting to do well. I think they should be far bigger than they are. Me personally, I put them absolutely top of that list of kind of riffy, kind of slightly from the sludge scene, but quite not quite bands like Mastodon and Kylesa and all those bands. I think they are far and away the best of the lot.
I mean, that warmth definitely comes across live. I like the way that they use the lights to colour the stage depending on which album they're doing.
Yeah, I think it's a really class touch. I think it's a great album. And if I want to just kind of like, you know, if I'm on my way to work and I just want to smash through an album that's going to just kind of rile me up and get me going, Golden Grey probably isn't the first one I'd go for. But if I've got like a lazy Sunday afternoon and I can just lie down and just let it wash over me, it's definitely the record I'd go for. In at number 8 in the official Metal Hammer list is Chelsea Wolfe with Birth of Violence.
One of my favourite albums of the year.
Oh, please go on.
It wasn't what people were expecting after Abyss and His Spun. It was a much more stripped down record. But what that got across was actually what an incredible songwriter she is. Like, you know, all the good artists, you know, their songs are scalable. You know, they can work in a big environment. If they can play an acoustic guitar. And there's a quality that she's got that I think is really magical. Like, she's always like in this in-between space. Like, she's haunting somewhere neither here nor there, but just this is kind of like slightly somnambulant, sleepwalking, like some voice in between the walls kind of feel to it. She just seems to have this perception that's on a different spectrum from pretty much everyone else. And it's kind of ghostly, but but the songs were just so beautiful, and they had this kind of slightly on the road feeling as well too. And I think it's pretty much my favorite Chelsea Wolfe album. I thought Abyss was the one for me. And this one, it's just, I keep going back to it again and again. And there's just a quality about the voice that's so simple, but hard to put into words.
Mm. She's becoming this record.
Sorry, yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, I just love it. I spoke to her for our sister magazine, Prog, and she was talking about how the album is the result of a long period of questioning and introspection for her and self-examination. And how, because she'd been on the road for so many years, like for a decade, she'd just been working on her career. She'd never really stopped to take stock of things. And she went back to her house and she really looked inside herself. And she started to think as well about what it was like to be a woman and acknowledge the feminine side of herself in a way that maybe she hadn't before, either because it's not always the done thing in heavy music. And also, I guess, just the stage of life she was at in her mid-30s, kind of looking around her and what she was doing. And as part of that self-examination, she turned to witchcraft as well and started looking at that. And she'd always been interested in that. But yeah, so she got into tarot reading a bit more and various things. And I found it really fascinating to speak to her, probably because I'm at a similar stage in my life, except without the witchcraft, as a woman in her mid-30s.
What kind of goth are you?
I know, right? As a woman in her mid-30s who's kind of... you know, thinking about my own life and where I've been and what I'm doing. And it's rare that there are always artists like that in heavy music. We have a lot of artists who are very self-reflective, but maybe not of the demographic that Chelsea Wolfe fits. So personally, I found that quite interesting. And also, like Jonathan said, just the quality of her voice and the quality of the songs, it's very genuine and authentic. And she's also kind of a big fan of things like old books and old language, so the phrases she's chosen to use are things that actually seem sometimes archaic and sometimes timeless in their quality. So almost like she's calling back to things from the past, but she's bringing them into the future and putting them in such a way that they can continue to be relevant beyond the present day. And I think that's a really powerful quality. It makes the music feel a bit more authentic and a bit more weighty.
Yeah, I think I'm sure it's like with certain other artists we'll probably talk about later on. There's so many layers of meanings in the lyrics and the music. But I think what she nails is something, this kind of paradoxical thing that she absolutely nails, which is that it's kind of totally raw honesty, but it feels like it's in the process of transition at the same time.
Yeah.
And getting those two together is such a magical feeling.
Yeah, she doesn't always say that she has all the answers. Mm. She's sort of writing things about the processes that she's going through and sort of reaching for conclusions, but it doesn't feel unfinished. It just feels more kind of open and questioning, yeah. I guess.
I mean, honesty isn't like a, you hit on one point.
I
honesty,
wish it was, Jonathan.
I know. but it's a dialogue within the self.
It is.
And that's what, you know, and that's what this
is. I think it's great to take some time and actually sit down with that and be like, who am I? What am I doing? Where am I drawing from? What are the influences of the past that I can take from? Because I think with the witchcraft thing, it was almost calling back to a different generation of women and looking back to what they'd done and accessing their power in inverted commas, because, you know, it all depends kind of what you think that is. But yeah, I don't know how you feel about that, Alice, because you're into sort of witchy stuff.
Love my witchy stuff. yeah, no, I really love Chelsea Wolfe. It took me a while to get into her. I was introduced to her quite a few years ago by a friend of mine who said that I'd like her because he was reminded of her with me. Does that make sense? I said that really awkwardly.
You reminded him of her?
Yes.
Or she reminded him of you?
Yeah, basically. And I had
your
black
soul
hair.
Sisters, that's what he's getting.
Yeah, at. Yeah. And like, I got like the aesthetic and I had black hair at the time and like I got what he meant, but I didn't really like the music. Like, this was quite a few years ago, so I can't even think what album he played me. But I think this is the one that came out this year. What's it called? I can't remember now.
Birth of Violence.
Birth of Violence, that's it. I think that's my favourite one so far of his. I liked her last album. I got into that a little bit. But yeah, this one's definitely my favourite. There's something about it that's like slightly more accessible, I suppose. Maybe to people who like metal. I don't know. It's, as you said, it's stripped back more.
So yeah, it's gone back to a more kind of slightly more acoustic roots.
Yeah, which I think is quite... I don't know, it just feels more accessible than the sort of more electric, like, I don't know, the sort of, what would you say?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she seemed to come up and like get critical mass around the time of Abyss. Mm. And she's one of those artists that the minute she comes on stage, the whole audience just falls silent. Mm. Like when she played Roadburn for the first time a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, like the awe for her in the room, there was just like this kind of like the amount of what she means to people, like the level of how much she means to people, you could just feel it. There's a certain expectation that you get with only certain bands when you know it's going to take you somewhere outside of yourself. Mm. And it's electric. You get that with Swan's gigs, you get that maybe with Heilung gigs. And it's just, you could really feel the energy in the room, but just before she came on.
She's become a real linchpin of our scene, and I think it's great that our scene has embraced her, because I think, you know, heaviness isn't always about a down-tuned guitar. It can represent herself in a lot of ways, and I think music like Chelsea Wolfe really shows that. And at number 7, I was so pleased. This is one of the ones I was really pleased to see make it into the top 10. Young British band, one of the most exciting young British bands in the scene today. Employed to Serve, Eternal Forward Motion. I thought this album was absolutely great. It made it into my top 20. I think they've always been a band that kind of, I guess you'd say they come from the metallic hardcore scene. They've got a very established sound now. But I think, I don't know, was it, do you know who wrote the blurb in the Employed to Serve blurb in the...
Not offhand.
Was it Steve Hill, per
chance?
It
could well have been.
I'm not sure. I don't want to lay credit where it's not due, but... yeah, they kind of talk about how fans of Converge and Pantera have both liked this band and this album, and I think that's exactly spot on. Like, basically, if you like heavy, confrontational, brutal music, Eternal Forward Motion is an album that you need to get inside your head. I thought the title track was just like the closest thing to kind of almost like an anthem that they've done. So, you know, it's something that where the actual Eternal Forward Motion refrain could just be screamed in front of 10,000 people as easily as it could a few hundred. But yeah, I thought this was just a fantastic example of a young band just getting better and better and better with each album. And I'm genuinely excited to see what they could do next, because I think they have all the tools to step up into something really significant for the UK scene. Agreed?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good.
I would agree. They've got so much energy as well, which is really cool. Like, we were just talking about Chelsea Wolfe. It's a different kind of energy to Chelsea Wolfe. This is more of sort of like a burst of energy, and it's that sort of young kind of shaking things up type of energy. It's cool.
Yeah, and I love just the way they kind of have, not got a gimmick, but I like the way they kind of get the matching jackets now, and I just think everything about them on this album cycle has seemed like a big step up, and that's awesome. So long may it continue, richly deserving of their place in the Met Hummer top 10. I was really pleased to see this in here as well, but it made it into my list too at number 6. I don't think I've ever heard an album, thought it was amazing, and then left unsure if I ever want to listen to it again, because it's just so emotionally harrowing.
Exactly what happens to me.
Lingua Ignota with Caligula, one of the most fascinating artists in the metal scene right now. And yeah, this album is a difficult listen, to say the least.
That's exactly what happened to me. I'd heard about her, I knew I had to listen to her, and I just put it on, and I think I was just making dinner in the kitchen at the time, and I was like, okay, this is happening. And just so heavy, so emotionally heavy, and it feels like you should, it's almost like a car crash type thing where you feel like you shouldn't be looking at it. Well, maybe that's a really bad comparison, actually, because I think you should be looking at it, but you sort of don't want to be looking at it.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. Scrap that. Yeah, scrap my comparison, though. I think what she's doing is really brave. She's going out there and she's making music about her experiences with domestic abuse, and she's also a fantastic musician. She has these amazing operatic vocals, and it's just this whole raw, stripped bare thing of this is how it is, and it's going to be shoved in your face and in your ears now. And it's this just, yeah, there's beauty in it, but it's also very, very, very ugly.
I think there's even more to it than that. It's not just a like reactive album of just like, of just in the sense that it's not just like, in the sense that what it does as well too is it tries to find a kind of a bigger structure for what she's been through and try and articulate the structure. Like I said, there's like with Chelsea Wolf, there's so many different layers and meanings, and then the way that she uses like, you know, historical references and the way she uses forms of music like power electronics that have often been used to express certain misogynistic, you know, whether you see those, you know, the original practitioners as being ironic or trying to say something different, but there's always been a certain level of misogyny in power electronics, or just a certain like general level of misanthropy, and trying to use all of these things to try and find a language of your own to describe something, you know, it's kind of in some ways indescribable.
Well, that's what the album's called, isn't it, as well? Lingua Ignota. I think it means unknown language or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah. And like just especially, so I saw her live a couple of times at Roadburn, and I saw her live at Oslo in Hackney this year. And especially the Roadburn shows, there's something so Hadean about it. What she was doing, she was playing in the round, so she played on the floor and people were in a circle around her. She was like swinging these lamps around her that kind of lit her really starkly. But on the backdrop, on the first show she played at Roadburn and the second in the Green Room, there was all these footage of the wildfires, driving through the wildfires in California. And it was basically a descent into hell. And yeah, there's a sense of like, there's a voice of purgatory coming out of it as well too. Mm-hmm. And again, it's that purgatory is like this in-between state where things aren't resolved. And that's kind of the resonance that her voice has as well. And I saw people at the front just looking up at her, just hyperventilating. And it is traumatizing, but it's something absolutely immersive. And there is some part of it in all our mental spectrums where on this dial that kind of totally resonates with. It's maybe a far end of that dial.
Yeah, I find it really, really tough to go there, if I'm honest. I think all the points you've said are amazing and you should be a music journalist or something. But I just find it really like, I think you are a lot more comfortable with going there than I am, because it is an uncomfortable place to meet, to be, and you kind of revel in that, I think, quite a lot, in being in those weird spaces between things and kind of pushing yourself along that spectrum, whereas I'm a bit more like, don't know if I want to be near this. But if you can go near it and you can immerse yourself in it, it can be super, super powerful.
But also, you know, I've kind of grown up with artists like such as Jemani Galas and Lydia Lunch, who can talk and sing.
Lydia Lunch sounds like a children's book.
Yeah,
she's
there's not a confrontational name.
Yeah,
as far from a children's book as you possibly could get. But you know, she would do spoken word as well, and you know, she was very upfront about talking about abuse, family abuse, and so incredibly powerful. And there's some Lydia Lunch spoken words and some Jemani Galas songs that I'm not generally scared by records. There's a few in my life, but some of the Lydia Lunch spoken word stuff, when I first heard it, totally gave me the heebie-jeebies. Just like a kind of primordial chill. Like there's some place that you've gone that's unbidden and you shouldn't go there.
Yeah, totally.
But there's something really being alive in that moment of just, you know, and especially as a man, not showing how far you can tread on that into there. But you still resonate with it. So although she's doing very much her own thing, and you know, everything is so well thought out with what she does, but still kind of very primal. You know, I've come up through Lydia Lunch and Jemani Galas and artists like that who have reached those kind of really forbidden zones.
I think what you said actually then about not sure, being sure how far you can go, especially as a man, into someone else's space, I think that's really interesting, because I definitely feel like that as somebody who hasn't experienced domestic abuse, it's like, how far can you go into that person's space? Like, she's making this art and sharing it, but it feels uncomfortable to be in a place where she's doing that when it's not your experience as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's not, I don't feel like it's voyeurism when you go and see her. I mean, obviously, you know, the best artists, whatever their situations, you find something universal in it, something that appeals, you know, something that hits on all of us and resonates.
Totally, yeah.
And I think she's probably one of those artists that's hitting these kind of archetypes. So I think if it resonates in your own sphere, whether you've been through those experiences or not, it shouldn't just be for those for people who have experienced that.
Sure.
You know, there's whole levels of experience and emotion that goes into it.
I totally agree with you. I think it's just one of those things where you're thinking, you can just have a reaction to it, can't you? Like an uncomfortable reaction about being there. But I haven't seen her live yet, so I'm curious to see what that's like.
It's funny that Stephen Hill, who said he just found it so hard to listen to, and he doesn't know if anyone wants to go back there. That was his album of the year.
I'm a writer, Stephen Hill. Yeah, it was his album of the year. So yeah, an incredible, but not always comfortable listen. Absolutely delighted this made it into the top five of the Metal Hammer list. And I think what they've done this year is testament to that. If you find some success in the metal scene, you don't have to then like make your music catchier or try and think what you're going to do to capture the bigger audiences and all that stuff, because in at number five is Venom Prison with Samsara. So you know, they put out Animus a couple of years ago, and it was obviously, this was a very important record for them, and they decided to go even fucking heavier and more savage than they were before, and I absolutely love them for it. I thought Samsara was an amazing album. It was I think at least in my top three of the year personally. And I'm really glad it made it into the top five of this list, because I just think they're a fantastic band. They've obviously done some things very outside their comfort zone this year, playing Glastonbury, for example, to a very non-partisan crowd. I'm just delighted to see that it's coming off for them, because I just think this record is savagely heavy. But also, you know, there's still some hooks in there. It's the production on it is just the right amount of kind of clearness where... clarity, I should say, kind of really brings the riffs out of themselves. I think Narissa Stupa's performance on it is absolutely unbelievable as well. I just think they are one of the most exciting things in extreme metal today. And I love this album very, very, very much. So there.
Yeah, I think it's a really good. I think it's a really good record. But you know, they're a death metal band. You don't expect death metal bands to be thinking, "Oh, should I go a bit more mainstream?"
But many do.
Yeah,
you know, many do, and especially when the thing with Venom Prison that interests me is that I don't think they naturally fit in any scene at the moment, because I don't feel like they're openly embraced by more old school death metalers. You don't necessarily see them on those kind of traditional death metal bills, but they're also kind of not really part of the deathcore scene. That it's almost like they kind of belong to that kind of the kind of hardcore scene that did, you know, give us people like Employed to Serve and various others. They just feel of like a kind of nondescript but really exciting wave of young British bands that have all kind of come up together. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I think that may be to do with the slightly to do with the lyrical concerns. You know, they're not talking about pits of hell, or at least, you know, they're talking about sort of more sort of political concerns. But I guess it was the same with Job for a Cowboy. You know, you listen to the records, as good a death metal band as you can get, like if you're an old school death metal fan, but there were just different clans. People would, you know, people would go or not go depending on whether they had long hair or short hair. And it just felt like they had a different crowd from the old school death metal crowd because they had short hair. But if you just played them musically, they were as good as any death metal
absolutely
band.
No arguments. I think it'll be interesting to see where they can go from here, because I think they, I just think they're fucking great. I just think they're a really, really great metal band. Samsara, very deserving. Again, just great young British metal bands in the top five of the Metal Hammer list. That's what we like to see. At number four, very different end of the scene, although certainly no less bonkers than some of the stuff we've had in this list already. Devin Townsend with Empath.
Yay.
Elle's looking excited by this.
This
was kind of his kitchen sink album, wasn't it?
Yeah, as in he threw everything into the album.
Yes.
So
no, he washes his plates in it.
Probably does, yeah. Can imagine that. So he dissolved the Devin Townsend project, where he'd been making records for like 7 years, seven records over 7 years he'd made with them, and came to the end of it and wanted to move on and try something different, and couldn't do it, unfortunately, with that band, so had to dissolve it. And this was his first solo record after that happened. And it just sounded like he decided to try every idea he's ever had all at once. And when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I felt like it was just too much of a mess and just too many things going on at once. And I was like, what is it? But then over time, it's funny how it works out, because you start to become used to where things and songs are, what's going to happen, and it becomes kind of familiar and things kind of settle out. The dust kind of settles, or like it's like a big bag of things that you've like shaken up, and then over time they sort of settled back down to the bottom, and it sort of made sense. I can't tell you when it made sense for me, but at some point it just made sense. And I think it's really cool that he took a leap of faith and did this, because I think if you want to do something, you should just 110% go and do it. And he did it exactly what he wanted to do. And I think you've got to respect that.
Fuck yeah.
I'm not at that stage yet that you're at. I feel like I kind of love Devin Townsend. There's a lot of motifs that I'm kind of getting a little bit sort of overplayed. Like these sort of cosmic thing, you know.
I know what
you mean. Yeah, I'm just sometimes I'm getting a little bit too cosmic out of this kind of cosmic euphoria that he has. And I just feel like I've got to... the only way to get my head around this record is to see it from space.
I haven't
got that far yet. I find the best way records like that you just like there's too much going on and you want to know how to make it click. Put it on the background when you're doing washing up.
That's exactly it.
Don't pay any attention to it. Just put it on the background and it'll come in through the back door of your brain.
But I think that's what happened to me. Because at first I was like, I just don't really like this. I'm just disappointed because it sounds like a mess. And then I think exactly what you said happened to me. Like it just went through the back door.
Yeah.
Now it's good.
Yeah. Just don't use the active conscious part of your brain to make sense out of it.
Oh, it's such a classic Jonathan thing to say.
Because I'm sure Devin didn't either.
Very fair.
What's that bit that I played to you, Merlin, when we first got in the office? I got a promo of it and I gave my headphones to you. And it was that bit where I start, it's like the book narrator bit. I can't remember how it goes now. It's not a very good story. The bit where the person is like narrating the story, and I was like, listen to this.
I remember when you first got it in, and you were just like, listen to this bit, now listen to this bit. And yeah.
And you just kept none of the bits
you were none of those bits you were showing me sounded like they belonged in the same thing. And I'm still not sure they do, but Devin made it work.
So. Put it in the background, let it go in the back door. That's the key.
There you go. In at number, let's be honest, the top three of this list is, you know, I don't want to say predictable, but when you've got three of the most important and biggest metal bands of all time, all releasing fucking great albums in the same year, chances are a lot of people are going to vote for them. So, in at number three, am I right in thinking, was this or number two your album of the year, Elle?
This was my number two, I think. Yeah. Okay.
So, the number three album of the year in the Metal Hammer list, Slipknot with We Are Not Your Kind. Obviously, when it first came out, it excited the shit out of all of us. We all kind of had a very strong reaction to it. Felt like, not to say that Slipknot had been off form, but I think a lot of people felt very quickly like it was the best thing they've done in at least a couple of albums. I said at the time, I think it was the best thing they've done since Volume 3. And I would still stand by that, to be honest. Every time I go back to this album, I still think the singles that came off it are some of the best they've done in years and years. Unsainted is fucking great. Nero Forte is great. Solway Firth is my favourite song.
Love it
that,
literally much.
One of my all-time favourite Slipknot songs.
How
I turned
good is
into.
Solway Firth? It's one of those songs. Absolute riff storm in my head all the time because it's great.
It's just so, so good, and all the kind of weird things they did, like Spiders, is really cool. I can't remember which song is which now. Just looking at it, Elias Funeral is really good as well. It felt like Critical Darling's great as well.
Birth the Cruel.
It felt like the whole thing's just structured really well, and the songs that were just like, we're Slipknot, this is what we do, they were great, and the songs where they stretched outside their comfort zone really worked as well. And I think in the same way that post Hardwired to Self-Destruct, it felt like there was a lot of goodwill back with Metallica again. I'm not saying Slipknot didn't have goodwill with them, but I think that everyone's really excited about Slipknot at the moment in a way that I don't think people have been in quite a while. And now obviously they're doing Knotfest as well in the UK, which is nice. So hooray for Slipknot.
I love this record. I think I tweeted about it when it came out and just basically did an enthusiasm dump. And then somebody joined in.
We've all taken an enthusiasm dump.
Somebody joined in and went like, oh yeah, I agree. Like there's, it feels like every song on here could be my favourite song. And I think that person, whoever it was, magical person, was absolutely right. Because the first time I listened to it, you'd already flagged up that I was going to love Spiders. Yeah. So I was a bit like,
it's spoopy, I was going to like it.
I was a bit like, will I? Do you know me? And then I heard it and I was like, oh my gosh, Spiders is amazing. And then Nero Forte, as soon as I heard that with the high vocal, I was like, I love Nero Forte. Got obsessed with that. Unsainted, obviously, I'd already heard. And then as I listened to it more, I liked Critical Darling and Elias Funeral and Birth of the Cruel and Solway Firth when it first came out. I think we were just really busy on the mag and I sort of listened to it and went, yeah, that's cool. And then when the album came out and I just started listening to it more, I was like, Solway Firth is literally one of the best things in the world.
Yeah.
I just love Agreed. The record. I think it's got, I like the fact that they obviously, like you said, they've got the Slipknot songs, but they've also done things a bit differently, like high vocals on Nero Forte, experimentation on Spiders. And they are so good at writing heavy, catchy, varied, interesting songs. They are just the quintessential modern metal band. You can't fault them.
Who would have thought we wouldn't miss Cocknose after all?
I think it's called Dicknose.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dicknose.
Yeah.
Dicknose or Cockface, either one. So number two in the Metal Hammer Albums of the Year list is Elle's number one. It is Rammstein by Rammstein. Now, am I right in thinking you said you thought this is the best thing they've ever done?
Yeah.
Now, so that's high fucking praise for one of the greatest metal bands of all time. Do you still stand by that a few months later? Does it still sit with you as, you know, right up there in their back catalogue?
Yeah, I think it's really hard because I'm not really naturally a lists person. And you're always like, pick things, make lists. And I'm like, why are you making me do this?
Press your complex opinions into a really strict, rigid format.
Yeah, basically. And I think as a whole Rammstein album, this is definitely my favourite ones. There's songs Excellent. On other records that I love more than songs on here. But as a kind of press play and listen beginning to end, this is my favourite collection of Rammstein songs. It's awesome. Fair to say.
I mean, it is a fucking great album. I know I said at the time that it trails off nearer the end, and maybe I was a bit harsh in saying that. I do still think the front half of the album is the best half, but there's still loads of other great stuff across the whole thing. Oh. And stuff like Pupa and like Auslander, which is a bit Auslander. Controversial when it comes to like the, you know, in a similar way to the Slipknot album, really. Like, there's stuff on there that is just Rammstein at their best. You know what you want from a Rammstein album, and they deliver it. And then there's stuff on there which feels a little bit different, and that's absolutely great as well. So
again, the first time I heard it, I wasn't massively blown away. Excuse me. I was like, yeah, this is cool. This is Rammstein. And then the more I listened to it, the more obsessed I got with it. And I think the fact that we broke it down a bit as well, like we broke it down sort of lyrically what it meant online and looked into the songs a bit more, and you sort of go through the layers and layers and layers. And it was the album where they went full Rammstein thematically. They really dug into their German heritage and their identity and what it means to be German in 2019. And Deutschland, I thought, was a really strong single to come out with that really set out their stall for that. Mm. And that epic kind of cinematic movie really showed where they were coming from in their thinking. And you do kind of need to dig a bit deeper and actually find out what's going on, because I didn't know a huge amount about German history apart from the obvious. And I thought they did it in a way that was very Rammstein, which was very big, very bombastic, very obvious, but then you dig beneath the surface and there's more going on, and there's humor as well. Like, Rammstein always just have like this big heap of humor, and it's playful and it's fun at the same time. And Pupa was amazing, like hearing Till really go for it on that. That is the moment in the middle of the record where you're like, what is happening? Like, something bad is happening right now. And even stuff like Auslander, they sort of had form with Pussy on that kind of Euro disco type tongue-in-cheek thing. And then actually, you know, they had a song called Sex. It's like, why haven't they even done that before? You know, like, that's so Rammstein.
And again, with the Pupa thing, I think because that was kind of a rawer side of the band that we weren't quite so used to hearing. Again, it just shows you that metal bands should be taking risks and should be unafraid to go outside their comfort zone. And if a band at Rammstein's level can do it, then anyone should still do it. I mean, it was a good sign that they're not resting on their laurels and they're not just shitting out stuff because they have to do an album so they can justify another tour. Like, again, everyone was very excited about Rammstein this year, and justifiably so. I think.
Love the cover as well, just a match on the front, like,
yeah, it's an unlit match.
It's great. Yeah, an unlit match. It's clever. Just really provocative. But I'd like to hear briefly what Jonathan thinks, because I don't think we've discussed this record. Did you like it?
I did. I haven't played it a huge amount of times. Rammstein, I'm kind of weird sort of distant relationship with Rammstein, because I grew up in industrial music, but I grew up in like bands like Liebeck, like the late 80s bands, and I always thought, well, I had Liebeck, so I didn't really need Rammstein in the same way. I feel like it's just a generational thing.
Yeah, maybe.
So I love the level of thought they put into everything. I love you know, all the references. I love all the you know, the outre humor about them. I just don't have a kind of a really
an emotional attachment to them,
and I think it's just because I mean, I was obsessed with Liebeck. Liebeck were one of the bands I just, like, I had to get everything of theirs I had, and again, that's a very that was a band that very sort of cleverly investigated their own Yugoslavian identity, and, you know, confused a lot of people where they were coming from. And all the bands that, so Rammstein, you know, inspired Rammstein, like them and Swans, and they've been very vocal about Swans being an influence. It's like, yeah, they're great. That's great. And I just, I like their records. I'm not invested in them in the same way that maybe you are, and I really appreciate this.
Fair enough. Our number one album of the year, we revealed it, or kind of talked about it at least last week. Tool, Fear Inoculum. We did talk about it at length. Els talked about it a lot at length on the podcast.
Yeah.
But just to say again, really, like, maybe no surprise, a Tool coming out and making an album that their fans certainly seem to absolutely love. I mean, it seems mad, really, that we were saying 7 months ago, you know, will Tool still feel relevant, and will, you know, will they be able to adapt to streaming? Is there an audience out there for them that wasn't there before?
I mean, I don't think,
and they've just completely shut us all up.
I don't think I was saying that. I think I was saying they're a massive band who sell out arenas when they haven't got a record out, so they'll be fine.
Right, well, as an incisive journalist, I was trying to suggest that maybe they might not.
No, I did think there might,
you know,
not be.
Our 20-year-old's going to give a fuck about Tool.
Yeah,
is basically
I did
what
think
I was
there might
at.
Not be as interesting. As much interest from the younger generation, but I think because of the noise generated by the record and the huge fan base they still have, the fact that those people make a noise, it at least makes younger heavy music fans go, okay, everybody's talking about it, I guess I'll see what it's all about. And when they put it all on streaming services, then it's like, that's an easy way to do that. But I definitely never thought it would not have an impact, because they're one of the biggest bands ever in our world, and 13 years away is like a huge amount of time to build up excitement for
it's
that.
1 year short of if I've got it right, it's 1 year short of how long we were waiting for Chinese Democracy, I think, which it was like famously like maybe the most infamous wait for an album ever. But it's been Tool's year, you know, they put all their stuff on streaming and they basically broke the internet by doing it. They've sold out tours, they headlined Download, and, you know, Tool fans were frothing at the mouth about that set. And then they put out an album that has been universally praised and adored. So no surprise, really, that Tool top our albums of the year list.
Yeah, I think there's a dialogue about it. I love Tool, but I feel very ambivalent about this particular record. Like, it's the most... The musicianship is so amazing, and it's like this kind of Olympian feat. That it's music played by gods above. But I just kind of wonder, what does it all mean to mortals such as us? I just feel like it's been played at this level above your kind of emotional attachment to it.
I don't really get that, actually. That's really interesting you would say that.
I love 10,000 Days for that. I felt really emotionally attached to that. I felt like it moved me a huge amount. This one, I'm kind of in awe of it.
Right.
I just, you know, ironically, for a record that's lyrically seems to be about, feeling the sense of disconnection in the modern age.
Mm.
I don't really feel what this record actually means to me personally. I keep going back to it and thinking I'm going to get some emotional attachment to it. And I don't. I'm just in awe of the level of musicianship and the precision.
Well, you could say that some of the restraint shown in the record is actually reflecting the theme of disconnection in modern age. If you wanted to get really analytical about
it. I mean, you know, I'm still trying to work out my reaction to it. And, you know, I love Meshuggah because there's nothing human about it, but I get a really human reaction to it. I'm just waiting for that moment with the Tool album. I think it's the greatest achievement of the year musically by a million miles. I think what they do, and especially. Danny Carey and his drumming and his tabla, it's just mind blowing.
I didn't really feel that sense of them like being gods, and I think it's because there's so many familiar things in there from Tool. You know, it's not a million miles away from what you'd expect a Tool album to be after 13 years away and with them at this age in their career and stuff. I think it's almost quite predictable in that sense.
Well,
but
I don't mean that in a bad sense.
I mean, it's got the kind of rhythms you expect. It's got the sort of lyrics you expect. It's got the kind of vibe you expect. It's got the percussion. We know Danny's good. We know he uses tabla. It's almost like a bit of familiarity going into it. Like, and then it kind of comes more and more over time, I think.
Yeah, it's just... I get it. It's just because I like the emotional connection to it. That's why it feels a bit...
You feel distance from it. And yeah. I definitely think it hasn't got the immediacy of like some of those older songs that just like his, you know, Maynard's vocals just kind of come straight at you and you just connect with it straight away. And I definitely feel more emotionally distanced than I do the other records.
Mm.
But I feel like it's more of a kind of ease into it, sit back sort of record than the other ones, which are a bit more like throw yourself on.
It was in my personal top 20.
Oh, fair enough.
There you go.
That was a swerve at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, as pure musicianship.
Face turn at the last minute by Jonathan Townsend.
Yeah, it wasn't super high up, but it was. I mean, I am in awe of the record.
I think we should discuss this more later, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's going to be ongoing. It didn't. As someone that's not a diehard Tool fan, it didn't make my list because there was so much good stuff. But I thought it was interesting to see the reactions. So there you go. That is the top 10 list. Tool at number 1, Rammstein at number 2, Slipknot at number 3, Devin Townsend at number 4. Venom Prison at number 5, Lingua Ignota at number 6, Employed to Serve at number 7, Chelsea Wolfe at 8, Baroness at 9, and Cult of Luna at 10. If you want to read the stories behind all the rest of the top 50 albums of the year, pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer now. Now, Elle's covered this because her number one album of the year is Rammstein.
Yay!
Hooray! But for the rest of us, I don't believe our personal albums of the year were included in that top 10 list. Alice, what was your album of the year and why?
My album of the year was Dark Throne and Old Star.
Oh, right. On brand as it gets.
Well, so, I mean, it's not the most black metal album of my top 10, really.
Okay.
Black metal legends, yes, but it's quite an 80s riffy, like heavy metal the vocals of Dark Throne. So it does make it kind of blackened heavy metal.
So what made this be out the more true cult black metal choices in your list?
Because it's Dark Throne. And I just love them and everything they do, they can do no wrong. Whether they want to go 80s, if they want to go 70s, if they want to go whatever, I'm there for it.
Yeah, they just don't give a fuck, do they?
No.
They just really don't give a fuck. They just do whatever the fuck they want, but whatever they do, like, they're such music geeks, but they reduce it down to its most base
and
primitive level.
Yeah, and it still sounds Dark Throne somehow. Like,
and their personality comes through, because you know, it's just a two-piece.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I really love this record too. And when you play it again,
so many catchy tracks as well.
So many catchy tracks, and you can like it. You can like it all. You can guess all the references. You just like it on a pure visceral or pure fun level. It sucks that we couldn't review it because they only.
It was a surprise drop, wasn't it?
It was a surprise drop. Yeah, we knew it was coming, but we weren't going to listen to it. At the behest of Fenris, the drummer. Who's like, you know, he's like the spokesman for the underground metal world.
He really is, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's okay with Fenris, it's okay with us.
But there is a review online that you can read that's my review. Yeah.
Yes. So if for some reason you missed the Dark Throne album, and if you did, shame on you, you posed, I'm joking. If you did miss the Dark Throne album, then go check out Alice's review online right now, and then go listen to it, because they are extreme metal legends. My album of the year, I have talked about on here quite a lot, so I won't talk about it too much again, but it ended up being Health for me with Slaves of Fear. This was a band that I'd kind of seen mentioned online a few times but never really listened to. I don't think I'd literally ever heard of them before this year, and this album came out, and it was actually Elle. What, you were expecting me to not give you credit then, weren't you? I looked up at Elle and just about to go, and then Elle told me all about it, and she had her mouth open, outraged at me, because she thought I was going to pretend that I knew about it before she told me, which I didn't. So Elle said there's this album out, and Elle kind of described it, and you know, Elle's more into the industrial gothier side of the scene than I am, so when I heard her talk about it, I was a bit like, nah, it doesn't really sound like something I'd be into, but I'll give it a go. And then I gave it a go, and it's just not left my I've not stopped playing it since, basically. I think it's an absolutely phenomenal album. If for some reason you haven't heard me gas on about it, kind of think Nine Inch Nails meets, I suggested Ladytron as another comparison, that kind of weird ethereal electronic music, mixed with like little bursts of Rammstein heaviness in there as well. Kind of weird, kind of metallic androgynous vocals. For the first like probably 3 months I was listening to it, I thought it was a female singer. And then I found that it's actually not. It's actually a guy called Jacob Dusnik. And yeah, he's got these really cool androgynous, weird, eerie vocals that kind of seep through it all. It's kind of dirty. It's seething. It's acerbic. It's like... and I think what I love about this album as well is that it's just paced so well and it's structured so well. And I think that's something a lot of people take for granted with music being consumed as it is nowadays. It kind of really just seethes and bubbles under throughout the album, and then kind of almost three quarters of the way through, the title track drops, and that's when it really goes heavy and the drums kick in and the riffs properly kick in, and it just is such a kind of a release of tension after like, you know, 35 odd minutes of this kind of weird eerie journey beforehand. And I absolutely love it. I saw them live at What's Bring Me the Horizons Festival. All Points East, thank you. Saw them live at All Points East and thought they were really cool. And just everything about them is great. I know this is irrelevant to their music, but I even think the way they do their merch and the way they just present themselves is just fucking badass. And I went back and checked out all their other stuff.
And it's all really good as well. Death Magic is a great record. But for me, Slaves of Fear far and away is the best thing they've done. And it's my favourite album of the year. So there. What was your album of the year, Jonathan?
Well, for the second year in a row, it's an album that dropped at the last minute. That made it into my number one.
Oh, interesting.
So last year it was Svarti Dauthi, Revelations of the Red Flame. This year it was Maguire, Age of Excuse. It's just a when I say it's a singular record, it's not that much of a move on from their previous records, but the level of conviction with which this band play is such a singular experience. And I've always loved this band. I think they're one of the best live bands in the world, in the underground metal scene. Like when they played Damnation this year, the room was more packed than it was for anybody else. Mm-hmm. There's obviously something that kind of connects beyond just being a black metal band. And yeah, there's been a wave of black metal bands like them, Svarti Dauthi, Miss Thurming, the last two from Iceland, that weren't sort of explicitly satanic or anything like that. But there's something really muscular about the way they play and just absolute level of conviction that becomes something more than the sum of its parts. With Maguire, there's a little bit of the way they do the riffs. There's something melodic and repetitive that reminds me a little bit of Nachmystium. Mm. But there's another
great band.
Yeah, but there's a level... There's a kind of level of misanthropy in Maguire albums that just feel like something coming out from on high, like this huge big finger pointing at the world, going, "It's too late, you're all in ruins, you fucked up," and I just find there's something so commanding about the way they perform and the way they sing it. And the way they play live, I didn't find anything to quite that level this year as much as that. Wow. There were other ones that were close. Shamash was my number two album of the year, and that also felt like almost like from like God's eye view of things, but also just throwing you into the maelstrom at the same time. Mm-hmm. But there was a touch up between those two records, but yeah, just Maguire is just. Like I said, not a big step on from the last album, but still just totally in and of itself.
Awesome. Outstanding choices, everybody. What was an album from this year that you felt like deserved maybe a little bit more attention? L.
Bet you can guess mine.
An album that deserved more attention?
Yeah.
Oh, God. No, I can't.
I wanted it in my top 20 and Jonathan said no.
Oh.
And it was Leprous and Pitfalls.
It was what, sorry?
Leprous.
You can put Leprous in your top 20.
No, I think I said you could put Leprous in. Leprous. It? There was one band.
One I wanted that you wouldn't let me have. I thought it was them. Was
no,
it
no, no, it
one?
Wasn't that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was going to say, that sounds harsh.
Yeah, was it Health you wouldn't let me have? Leprous it was Health you wouldn't let me have in my top.
Health was my number one, mate.
Or maybe so. I did have it in there. There was one band that you
there was one. I can't remember who it was.
Okay.
Ooh, mysterious. But yeah, Leprous.
Leprous.
Young prog lads.
Yes, prog lads. Don't even know what to say to that. But yeah, they're a band from, probably a lot of people listening to this know Leprous already, but they're from Norway. They were initially the backing band for Isan, as in ex-emperor Isan. And they make progressive music that is sort of heavy in an emotionally progressive way. Ooh. Some of it, you could argue, falls into metal when it gets sort of more intense, but I guess it's kind of on the borderline between metal and prog. And they had a record out this year called Pitfalls, and it's just an amazing record. Ina Solberg, the singer, has this incredible voice, which, again, like other things I've mentioned today, it took a while to grow on me. At first, when I heard him, I wasn't too sure about it because it's very high-pitched, and I just didn't really connect with it. But after I did, I just thought it was incredible. His range is amazing. The notes he can reach and the emotion he can put into his voice, and it's very distinctive as well. And he's made this album this year with Leprous called Pitfalls, and it's based on his depression. He started writing it after he became depressed and sort of struggled through it, but it's not you know, to say it's just that would be to do it a disservice, really. It's kind of about life and emotion, and the musicianship on it is incredible. The drummer for Leprous is amazing. He's a guy called Bard. And when Aina composed the record initially, he had a lot of electronic drums on it. And he said that Bard was worried that he was going to be replaced, but they worked together to combine the electronic elements with some of Bard's drumming because he's so good. And it has these kind of huge songs with massive choruses. There's one in the middle called At the Bottom, which was my favourite initially listening to it, because it's just this sort of, it's 7 minutes, but it's very catchy and very intense, and the way he uses his voice as an instrument is just amazing. And then there's another song that after that one I just got really into, which is Distant Bells, which is kind of one of the more, I think it's one of the more sort of hopeful upbeat songs. It's not a complete misery record. Some of it's misery. Leprous have a lot of misery in them, but there's also hope in it, and actually kind of you know, you're not always going to be in this dark place and you're going to come out of it, and it's, you know, human experience. And the very last track, if you're really into prog, there's a track called The Sky Is Red, which is their longest ever track. It's 11 minutes and it's sort of a little bit avant-garde and experimental, and he wasn't really sure about doing it, and it's got orchestral bits in it as well. It's got a choir in it, and it's like they just went big. It's like he had this idea, wasn't sure whether to run with it, and then just completely ran with it. And the whole record is just an experience, and I just think it's fantastic. Like, if you've not heard Leprous Pitfalls, just put it on, because you're in for a treat.
Lovely. Jonathan, what's your choice for an album that people should stop ignoring right now?
Dead Feathers.
Literally not heard of that, so that's definitely a good choice.
There's an album called All Is Lost. They put out an EP last year, and the way I felt about that EP and about this record is kind of similar to what I felt about when I first heard Royal Thunder.
Wow, okay.
Like, which is one of
you used to fucking love that band.
I still do. One of my favourite all-time bands. But it's just, again, it's like with that first Royal Thunder mini album, and it's the same with the first EP, it felt like it was kind of emerging, like creating itself in real time, just emerging out of nothingness and building itself up into something. And so it's kind of, again, it's kind of bluesy, but like no blues you've ever heard. A singer, she has an incredibly rich vibrato voice. But all the songs are kind of like, the rhythms are kind of very mantric, and they build up and they build up and they build up. And everything's so sort of tentative, and just totally draws you into this kind of rhythm that they create. And it's just one of the most beautiful things I've heard for ages. It's probably one of the records I go back to the most this year.
Awesome.
And I wish they'd play live. They should be playing Roadburn or Desert Fest. It just hits a spot for me. The mantric nature of it, the way it just builds and builds and builds, and again, it feels like it's kind of recorded in limbo. And I love that feeling of just this kind of constant motion in limbo, basically, with a really earthy but ethereal aspect to it at the same time.
Savage. Love it. Alice, what's your choice for an album we should all be listening to more?
This is really hard because there are so many.
I thought you might say that. You can pick one.
Well, I'll probably pick Devil Master then.
Oh, go on.
And Satan's Bits on Children of Light.
Fuck!
Which is the best album title ever, by the way. And their Satan name even just sounds like an 80s like tabletop game, right? Like Devil Master. Yeah, and like, you know.
I think we've done them in the magazine before, but a while ago, yeah.
Well, they had that album out this year, and they're relatively new. They've only been going for a few years. This is their first like full length album, and they sound kind of like a mixture of like 80s kind of electronic, like horror, I don't know, soundtracks.
Quite theatrical, aren't they?
Yeah, really theatrical, and black metal, quite punky, little bit sort of kind of thrashy, punky. Black metal with 80s electronics going on occasionally.
And unquestionably the best album title of 2019, so fair play to them. Mine was one I talked about briefly a few months ago, and it's quite simple, really. Mine's Judiciary, Surface Noise. Basically, if you're hankering for that new Power Trip album and there's kind of like a rattling, thrashy, by way of hardcore gap in your life right now, just pick up Surface Noise by Judiciary. It's so great. It's so relentless. I think they're from Texas as well, actually, fellow Texans as our Power Trip. And yeah, just dirty, filthy, like produced in the nastiest way possible, kind of thrashy hardcore or hardcore/thrash. I don't know which way around you want to put it. But yeah, they're just fucking great. And I've been playing that album all through the year. So go and pick that up right now, please. Your favorite new band you've discovered this year, guys? Anyone want to go first?
I'll go first.
Go on, then.
A band called ELR. So E-L-R. So yeah.
Tell us about them.
They I saw them, they're very much in a post Amon Ra world, and again, I mean, they toured with Amon Ra, but they've definitely got something else of their own going on, and there's elements of like post black metal in there, but there's kind of very sort of, again, like haunting the periphery feeling to it. And it's everything I wanted post, or, you know, the kind of like the shoegaze black metal to be, but really wasn't. Like, so much more vivid than I find most of the shoegazy or the black gaze metal. And it's not wistful, it's haunted. And it was such an incredible experience seeing them live over the weekend. They played at Nambuco. And they look incredible
Big
as
up
well.
Holloway.
It's just a three-piece, two women actually look very similar. Both, it was blonde hair, center partings, both wearing the same clothes. So it gave this kind of like slightly mirror feeling. And they both got these extremely ghostly vocals that just, again, they just kind of haunt the periphery, but it's got a real pull to it. And it's just, yeah, something kind of quite mystical about what they do. And it will do strange things to your brain patterns.
Nice.
So yeah, so that album is called Maenad. And it came out a couple of months ago.
Loved it.
Yeah, so there's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of kind of references. You'll have to explain what a Maenad is.
Well, I only know from True Blood. It was like a in that it was like a demoness thing that sort of got people to do whatever it wanted, and then they had a big bacchanalian party at the end of it with a sacrifice.
I remember that season. Yeah, when that TV program started going a bit shit.
No,
it never went shit
until the very end, which I was disappointed.
It never went shit.
We don't have time for this debate now, guys. Come on, move it along.
The whole thing was great
when Eric stopped being a badass.
Yeah.
Oh, Eric was great.
Well, Alice, you've got the mic. Who's your favourite new band of the year?
This is really, really hard because I don't know. I discovered this year probably. I've discovered quite a few bands. The beginning of the year, I think I discovered this band. Well, it's like a one-man band, how do you say it?
How do you spell it?
Well, there's a band, S-A-O-R, but they're not a one-man band.
It is. It's one guy who
Scottish band.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen him live. There's more than what he was.
Yeah, but he's the like...
Okay, he's the main guy.
It's his project.
Yeah, it's his project, yeah.
It's not one guy with one of those fucking like drums set up to him.
I mean it's him. He's the band.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they've been around for a little while. But.
Yeah, but I discovered them the beginning of the year. And they released Forgotten Paths.
I think they just been signed to a bigger label?
I think they've signed to Season of Mist.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. As well. But
black metal.
It's kind of like a folky mix.
It's got black metal elements in it.
Yeah. It's the kind of like almost... I can't even think of words now.
I guess like maybe that there's a slight similarity to... Is it what, maybe Dawn Raid, perhaps, in a sense?
Yes. It's like that sort of...
it's quite uplifting.
Atmospheric as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's quite uplifting in a very sort of... yes. Scottish way, I guess.
It's got Scottish elements as well, yeah. Which is cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Go check that out. What's the album called?
Forgotten Paths.
Forgotten Paths.
Or Pathways?
By Saw.
No, Forgotten Paths.
Forgotten album titles by Saw. <out now. laughs>
I'm being so helpful today.
It's fine. It's the end of the year. We're all tired. Elle, what's your favourite new band you got into this year?
The Who. Oh,
of course. I should have predicted that. Excellent choice.
Mongolian metal is The Who.
Mongolian Sensations.
Yeah. Just interesting and fun. Obviously, we have had Mongolian metal before. Sadly, we lost Nature this year from Tenga Cavalry. That was his project. He did Mongolian metal. But The Who are doing something that's sort of more rocky. It's like a sort of rocky band with traditional instrumentation, Mongolian throat singing, and they call it Hunu rock. And Who is a Mongolian root word for human. And they had their first album out this year, which is called The Gerig. And it just combines all those things together. And it's just a great listen. It's very accessible, very catchy. It's a lot of fun. And it's just really cool how they're bringing in all these different elements and different instruments. And I just thought it was good. Of course, there was the viral video as well for, I think it was UVUVU, which the viral one where they were standing on a mountaintop. And that took off on the internet.
It's actually crazy the numbers they're doing online in general, though.
Millions.
Like, unheard of for a band from outside the usual, you know, the usual places you would expect big metal bands to come from.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
I heard Wolf Totem first. I heard it like in summer, and someone was listening to it. He was skateboarding in Hyde Park and stuff as well. And I was like, this is cool. And tried to find more, and they only had like two tracks out, so it was really cool. They released an album this year, and I'm really excited to see what they do next.
Skate punk band The Who.
Not quite.
I was gonna pick, well, I was thinking about picking Renounced for my favorite new band, because they are fucking great, and they are producing the kind of metalcore that you know, people of who love proper fucking heavy metalcore would like. It's not the shiny stuff, it's the real deal. I talked about it a few weeks ago on the podcast. So if you haven't heard the Renounced album, definitely check that out as well. If you like stuff like Poison the Well, Early Killswitch, all that vibe. But I had to kind of go, I had to be a bit more honest with myself. And for me, the best thing I've heard this year, I know that they were around last year as well, but I didn't hear them until this year. Twin Temple is my favourite thing that's hit the metal scene this year. I just love what they do. I think the album's fucking fantastic.
I love that record.
I can't pretend to be a fan of doo-wop generally, but I do love Amy Winehouse's stuff, as most basic people like me do. No, I think that's unfair. Back to Black's a critically acclaimed album, isn't it?
I think you're pretty basic.
I am pretty basic, but you know, I'm basically
all. You can hear that because I didn't have a mic.
What I'm trying to say. Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that I'm not a fan of the doo-wop genre as such, beyond the obvious touch points. But I thought I think it was Twin Temple give you their signature sound, Satanic Doo-Wop.
Bring it their signature sound,
yeah.
Satanic Doo-Wop.
I thought it was absolutely fucking great. I love what it represents. It's all about empowerment, and it's about kind of Satanism in the themes of kind of self-choice and self-belief. I just think it's fucking fantastic. I love the videos and the visuals that they do. I love the fact that they've legitimately pissed off the far right and the kind of Christian right in the US. They're just doing all the right things that metal should be doing. And the fact that they're not even metal, but they're one of the most metal things to happen in metal,
they're
is
on
metal
rise,
as fuck.
Yeah, they're on Rise Above, which kind of puts them into our world a lot as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that absolutely was. Yeah, they are legit the real deal when it comes to the satanic stuff. Yeah, absolutely love them. I can't wait to see them in January.
Yeah, I spoke to them, and the whole backstory is, you know, such a genuine backstory about, you know, as being part Korean, feeling in some ways an outsider, being made to feel an outsider, and using that and taking that as a positive, and finding that there's lots of things, you know, as an outsider status you can play with.
Absolutely. I love everything about them, and I can't wait to see where they go. Someone book them on a UK tour with Ghost, please.
It
would be perfect. That's not my pick for non-metal album of the year, so I'll go into that in a bit. But what's everyone else's non-metal album of the year? What's your favourite thing you've heard that would not dare tarnish the pages of Metal Hammer magazine?
Mine is Kate Tempest.
Oh, I love that record.
We've never spoken about this.
I didn't know you liked it. Yeah, that's a great album. I talked to it about Bryony the other day.
The Book of Traps and Lessons.
Fucking awesome album. UK hip-hop represent. I knew you had it in you, Elle.
That was patronising.
Oh, come on. I always slags off. Well, you slagged off my pick for this category, actually.
Did
so
I? We'll
that's why I'm bitter about
we'll
it.
See when we get to it. But actually, my friend Jared Woods, shout out Jared Woods, he's a writer, has a website, look him up. He turned me onto this because he went to see her and posted about it on Facebook, and I'd never heard of her before. But she's an English spoken word performer and artist, and she writes about life in London and basically this whole sort of broken Britain thing. And all her songs are kind of about the daily grind and people's differences and politics. And she also does write about relationships as well and what's going on there. But on the book of Traps and Lessons, it ends with this song called People's Faces. And it's basically just, yeah, it's a long poem all about the divisions in our society. And then with that, it's tinged with hope, because when she looks at people's faces, she can see sort of peace in their faces and the common humanity between us. And I just thought it was a really nice song, and I think she's got a really cool way of expressing things. And because she is a poet, like, the songs, yeah, they're more like poems set to beats than they are kind of full songs. And
yeah, that's fair.
She's got a cool turn of phrase, and the way she articulates the sense that is around at the moment, you know, the political and social anxieties, she just does it in a really good way.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this album before.
I didn't know you liked it.
I love it. I think it's great. Yeah, I think I'm not really... She's, again, one of those names I've heard around, bandied around, you know, kind of like award shows and stuff like that. And I've never properly checked her out until this album. And I think it's fucking awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it might be a bit biased as well because I live in London. So it's sort of like you kind of get the whole thing she's talking about. It's sort of city life and that kind of thing. There's that sort of vibe going on as well. But yeah, I'd definitely give it a listen.
Banging.
It just says here as well. I don't know if this is true. I just Googled it. Produced by Rick Rubin?
Oh, cool.
Is that a thing?
Awesome if true.
Or is that just a random
massive if
glitch
true
on the website? I'm going to try Googling that.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. If she did, that's like, you know, another link to our world.
Wow. Jonathan, what was your
I think,
favourite?
On a pop level, or vaguely pop level, Way's Blood, I really liked.
I don't know who that is.
I discovered, like, normally everything The Guardian recommends, I listen to it and it's absolute dog shit. And the same with most. Okay. I just think everything they kind of recommend is just so kind of bourgeois middle class and just meh. But then this came up, and just, there's something about it. It mentioned reference to The Carpenters, and I thought, well, I really like The Carpenters.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to check this out. It's really good. It's got, you know, with The Carpenters, the eeriness, you kind of, you imprint on that yourself from what you know about Karen Carpenter. This has got a certain element of that in it, this kind of like lost in time, kind of slightly 50s feel to it. I haven't played it that often because I literally only discovered it, but there's that. But the record that I've been listening to so much lately that's totally non-metal is a band called Ti Na Wee Wen. They're,
I feel like I've seen that name.
Yeah,
yeah, they're actually pretty big. And so sometimes I go around listening to, like, you know, different kind of world music stuff, not because I'm trying to be worthy, just trying to find weird rhythms are going to mess with my brain. You know, like you know, non-Western rhythms.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got obsessed with that Ukrainian band, Dacha Bracha, which will do weird things to your brain on so many different levels. But this is a band from Mali. It's from the desert area of Mali. They're from a clan, the Tuareg clan, and they've been involved in wars. And, you know, the lead singer, he's according to Wikipedia anyway. I didn't know this when I first started listening to them, that, you know, he watched his dad being executed at the age of 4.
Jesus.
It kind of puts you into a really weird frame of mind. So it's kind of desert, weird kind of desert rock. They play guitars, and it feels like you're sitting around a campfire. And it feels like it's kind of happened organically, but it hasn't. It's really well thought out. There's all these kind of weird kraut rocky rhythms in them. And it feels kind of weirdly laid back for the whole kind of, for the background that they've had. But there's obviously like a kind of emotion that they create that kind of allows all this history to circulate around it. And it's beautiful, it's earthy, it's really trippy at the same time. And again, that kind of repetition that I love, it's really in there, but just coming from a totally different place. And they are huge now. They played The Earth and Hackney, and that sold out loads of times. I mean, that sold out like really far in advance. And there's loads of people I know that are just like, have you heard, you know this band? I'm like, oh my God, I love this band, Tina Arena. And yeah, it just connects really deeply.
Awesome.
You know, even without the backstory, even if you don't know the backstory of them.
Mm. That's cool. My album, non-metal album of the year, is Psychodrama by Dave. There's probably a good chance that people would have heard of this guy, really, because he's just blown up in such a crazy way this year. I'm pretty sure this album went to number one, in fact. And he bagged. Did he win the Mercury? I feel like he did. If he didn't, he definitely should have, but I can't remember. But I think Psychodrama is amazing. I dip in and out of grime. I'm not going to pretend I'm a massive fan of the scene. Most of my reference points for it are kind of the more well-known artists. And I don't even know if it's fair to call this a grime album, really, because a lot of it is a very different pace and a very different tone to what a lot of grime offers. But I just found this an absolutely fascinating record. It's kind of a semi-conceptual album that kind of follows the idea of Dave being in a therapy session. And so there's a lot of stuff to do with mental health in there. And in terms of male mental health, I found that one of the most kind of raw and uncompromising expressions of mental health issues in young men that I've ever heard on an album. There's loads of other things in there as well that are kind of relevant to his life and that a lot of people might resonate with. There's things like domestic abuse in there. There's a lot of stuff about his older brothers spending time in prison and his convictions and everything else. There's things to do with relationships, black identity, working class identity. There's loads of stuff in there. There's a song on there, which is one is it? It's a name. Leslie. There's a song on there called Leslie that's a domestic abuse narrative that's 11 minutes long. And, kind of the way Elle was talking about with Kate Tempest, like there's points where I don't really feel like I'm listening to a hip hop or a grime track with this album. It feels like you're actually listening to someone just vocalizing some of the stuff they've lived through and witnessed and have been dealing with. And so, again, I can't pretend this is a particularly edgy and an underground choice because he's very widely known now. But I think it's a fucking phenomenal, phenomenal record. And he had a big flaming skull with him on stage at Glastonbury. So what's more metal than that? Hey, hey. Mm-hmm. Alice, do you have a pick for a non-metal album?
Well, this is
I'm interested
really,
to know this.
Yeah, this is really, really hard because I basically haven't listened to anything that wouldn't be able to go in the magazine in some way, shape or form.
Good. Repping the brand.
So the only thing I could think of that I've listened to is Drab Majesty.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
I don't think I've listened to the whole album either. I've just listened to like three songs on repeat.
Very 80s.
Haven't strayed outside the metal bubble.
It's part of the whole kind of 80s revival, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like
miserable 80s.
It's miserable 80s, like electronica, like, yeah. The guy behind the project sort of thing, Deb Demure, or Andrew Klinko or something his actual name is, calls it Tragic Wave. So
nice.
It's just really sounds like something dredged up from the 80s, just with lots of synths and shit.
If that's your vibe, go check that out.
Yeah, it basically sounds like if Enola Gay by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, but depressed.
Mm.
It's got that sort of the very 80s nasally vocals.
Yeah.
I know a lot of black metal fans. I don't like the band, but I know loads of and I'm an 80s kid, but I know loads of black metal fans who love Drab Majesty.
Wow, fair. Go check that out if that sounds like your thing. Elle, what's been your gig of the year?
My gig of the year has been Rammstein.
Oh, nice. Why did I even ask? What a stupid question, sorry.
Which is basically my second ever best gig, probably. It was really good.
It was by any account that anyone could ever give fucking amazing. I would really worry about anybody anywhere that could not think it was an incredible, incredible show.
So first of all, the actual stage setup poked above the top of the stadium because it was so big and imposing and dystopian and weird. And then when the band were coming on, there was this black smoke that started issuing from the top of the weird dystopian sculpture and also these towers all around the stadium. So there's just this weird, horrible, black, toxic smog. And it genuinely felt like, what the fuck is happening? And you could taste it and smell it. And it's probably very polluting. But it was really like, it really set a creepy atmosphere that they could do that on that scale. And the fact that they didn't, they could have just come out in a massive explosion, but instead they chose this weird, creepy, subtle black smoke thing and then did the explosions. So I just thought it was really cool, and it was great to hear some of the new songs. And they had new stuff like in Pupa, they had a massive oversized pram that Till was pushing with a camera and a baby. And it's
I forgot about some of this stuff.
It's all very stupid, but like very entertaining as well. And they did the whole get in a dinghy and surf back thing. And fortuitously, I was standing right next to the smaller platform where they were leaving from. So I saw them stand in on the small platform and do a song and then sail off in the dinghies. And I was right there when they were getting in them. And I was a bit fangirl about it. I was like, they're getting in the dinghies. They're right there. Ah,
so cool.
And then they obviously surfed back to the stage and did the rest of the show. And when they did bring the fire, there was fire everywhere. The whole stadium was on fire. And you could just feel it on your face. And wherever you were standing in the stadium, it looked amazing. I watched most of the gig from there, but towards the end, I went out to the back of the stadium, and just to have that kind of distance view of it was still insane.
Fan. Loved it. Fantastic.
Going to go see it next year in, where's that place? Coventry.
Nice. Yeah. So unbelievable show. Alice, gig of the year?
Oh, God. What did I write down? Swallow the Sun at the Underworld.
Oh, nice.
Just because I love them. And I was like right at the front, like, oh my God, I love this. Yeah, that's what I wrote down. So I'm gonna go with it.
Elle very briefly mentioned that last week as well as your favourite kind of sub 1,000 cap gig, which was one of the very specific questions we got.
I wish I'd been that gig.
Yeah, I kind of wish I had as well, because Ocean's Slumber supported, and they're a fucking awesome band too.
Yeah,
don't make that face, Alice. Cool.
That last Swallow the Sun record was amazing. That was really high up in my album.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about just talking about that more in here somewhere, but I think we talked about it quite a lot already. So, but if you haven't heard the Swallow the Sun record, oh my God, go listen to it. My pick was kind of predictable, but Metallica doing SNM2 in San Francisco. Obviously, I appreciate not a lot of people get to see a show like that. But even now, I still look at that back at the set list, and it just amazes me that a band that I've seen so many times, and I really thought I knew inside out, and I thought I'd seen all the ups and downs that they could possibly bring. It amazed me that a band like that still genuinely challenged me and genuinely left me walking away from a gig thinking I need to process this and think about what I've just seen. I've watched the film back since I went to the show as well now, since the last talked about it, and it made me love it all even more. The kind of classical songs they did with the composer whose name's Michael Tilson Thomas. They did the classical songs with him. That was amazing. The version of The Unforgiven 3 with James Hetfield on vocals solo. The country-fied version of All Within My Hands. Anesthesia Filling Teeth on the bass, the stand-up bass that the guy was playing solo. Just absolutely unfucking believable. And finally got to see Outlaw Torn, which is the best Metallica song I think I've ever seen live. So that was my choice. What was yours, Jonathan? Your gig of the year?
Yeah, well, I had a tough one, so quite a few. Like a lot of festival ones, Anna Von Hauteorf at Roadburn. Just mind-blowing, just the amount of power that woman has in her voice for that. It just takes you out of yourself. Heilung, obviously, Midgard's Blood, you know, in Maria Francis' hometown.
Yeah, that was the other one that I was thinking.
Yeah, but actually I'm going to go for the one that actually surprised me the most, which was Ministry.
Really?
Yeah, like seriously.
Can't be surprised.
Yeah, Ministry at the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Shake your head at me, Al.
And, you know, it must have sucked for them, because the minute they booked it, that day, Rammstein booked the same night at Milton Keynes.
That's weird. You two were both your favourite gigs of the year at the same night.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
And I wasn't really expecting that much from Ministry. I've seen them before. I thought there may be slightly a bit of a spent force. I saw them in the Psalm 69 days, and that was incredible. And I saw them again since. I was like, nah. And I saw them fairly recently, and it's fun, but it's more of a kind of like theatre and comedy and everything else like that. So I came not expecting much, and especially when they're going to play the new album, America, which is an interesting album. It was very dispersed for them. But you know, this time around they stripped down the set. I mean, they had a video screen. They didn't have all the, like, you know, Trump dolls on stage, and it wasn't like this kind of carnival. And it's like with Cradle of Filth, when they strip down their set and they get to the nub of it, you suddenly realize what an amazing band they are. And it was so, everyone was so tight, and they just played through America. And even that was just amazing. Just like, I don't even need the hits right now. I was just reminded me of everything I loved about that kind of late 80s, just totally pneumatic, you know, early in industrial kind of feeling, or mid-period industrial feeling. And just everything I loved about Ministry. And it's just, I was just like loving every second of it. And then they played all the hits from, you know, like Psalm 69 era, like Just One Fix, NWO. And I just lost my fucking shit. I was just in seventh heaven. And just, so on a pure, just losing my shit, just getting in the groove, just loving every second of it. That was the one. And I was so on it, like on paper, that would not have been the one. But awesome. It was just, yeah, just amazing.
I think obviously it's vitally important to, you know, talk about new music and stuff when it comes to the live experience, but it's also really empowering when you see a band and it reminds you of why you fell in love with them in the first place, and you know why it is important to still appreciate these artists while you've still got them.
Yeah, Al Jochensen was really sharp. He wasn't wearing sunglasses, which I think also helped the level of communication.
Eye contact always helps.
Yeah. And it's just like, you, I've seen so many music gigs, but this one you just tune the dial in and you've got a perfect signal. It was just brilliant.
Excellent. Right, we're in the home straight now, ladies and gent. the moment that defined heavy music in 2019, and you can interpret this however you want. It could be a silly moment, which you think, oh, this just sums up what metal's all about, or it can be something kind of really era-defining.
Well, I was sort of just going to go with Tool, but then you said silly moment, and that made me just think Clown hitting the big thing with a flaming baseball bat. What's the word I'm looking for? The barrel?
The barrel, yeah.
So he came, I was watching this clip. I was watching this clip again the other day. And he comes to the stage with the barrel and it's on fire. And then he kind of does this hand movement like it's a wank because it's Clown. And then he goes over to the barrel and he just smashes it with a flaming baseball bat.
That was awesome.
That's very Slipknot.
You don't get that anywhere else but in metal, do you?
I love the pictures that came out afterwards of him just standing up with the bat as well. It just looks really incendiary and cool and like, yeah. And Clown's got that new mask that just looks sort of like this expressionless chrome thing. And yeah, you're just like, yeah, Slipknot, cool.
Hooray. Jonathan, what moment defined
on a
music?
Poignant note, okay. Slayer's last gig.
Oh, excellent answer.
You know, it feels like we're starting to reach an end of an era. And you know, we're all the things we're starting to have to say goodbye to, all some of our festival headline bands. Just a big moment for everyone. And you know, it's such an important band on so many different levels for so many people. And just, we're going to have to, like, I don't think it's really hit anyone yet, but we'll come around next year. We're just like, oh yeah, Slayer, that's it.
Yeah, they're not here anymore.
Yeah.
That's a fine answer.
Yeah, I think, and maybe another one is, maybe because I keep banging on about it, but it's such a big thing, just hiring at Roundhouse. You know, like, second ever, like, who plays a Roundhouse on their second ever UK gig? I was there for Sun the week beforehand. It was way busier for Highland. So just, the reason I keep going about it, because I don't know any other band who hits such a nerve across so many different fields. And I think none of us can underestimate how big that band is going to be. I'm sure if I'd seen Rodruna at Red Rock, that would have been like...
Oh, man, that's a big ambition of mine, to see a gig at Red Rock.
I really want to go to Red Rock. Looks unbelievable. It just looks like... Ugh.
Yeah, but Rodruna playing there would have been... Oh, my God, that would have been so amazing. They played there a few months ago, and quite recently, actually. I'd love to have been to that. But yeah, just the Highland thing, it's just... I haven't seen anything blow up quite so big. And you know... And it doesn't feel like a trend or a hype thing, because no one else has really given them much press apart from us.
Nope.
You know, we're the only
we're the best.
Yeah, we're the only UK we're the only UK mag that's ever written about them, and I don't know why no one else has, but
because they're not as good as us.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously,
we're the best in the world.
But I've never seen a band that triggers something in you like quite like that.
Yeah. Fair.
No, I'm just googling what I can go and see at Red Rock next year.
Well, I really wanted to see. We were just talking about non-metal bands. I'm a massive Deadmau5 fan, and he played Red Rocks this year, and I was like, "That's my non-metal dream." So at the moment, the fine heavy music this year for me, it's a bit of a nebulous one because Slipknot getting a number one album on both sides of the Atlantic, I think, was fucking awesome, and it was such a huge moment, and the kind of celebratory feel that came off the back of that was brilliant. But it didn't also make me think this doesn't happen enough. And it made me also think, you know, with Tool getting the number one album as well, like, I wish we were able to kind of produce and just have a situation where more modern bands were really breaking into the mainstream in the way that the bigger and older metal artists still can. You know, I still think that metal is far too noticeable by its absence in like big awards lists and TV shows and radio play and all this kind of stuff. And what is a really big deal to us is still maybe not kind of feeling like it could be, it still feels like it could be a bigger deal on a mainstream level. I look at someone like Ghost, who are unquestionably the breakout band of the moment. And I still feel like we're waiting for them to kind of be noticed by people outside of the metal world. Like when everyone in my school year in knew Duality, like everyone knew that song, whether they liked it or not. It was just one of those songs that people just knew because it was so big. And I really want to see more bands do that. So I think there's still work to be done in there. But I also do think, as I mentioned earlier, seeing Venom Prison play to an initially quite empty but then slowly filling field of people at Glastonbury, and seeing people genuinely not knowing what the fuck they were looking at, but then seeing them clearly be won bowled over by it and start to really engage with it, made me kind of think, you know, the potential is absolutely still there. And if we can find ways to continue supporting and pushing these young artists, I think the potential is absolutely still there for them to make an impact outside of the metal world. So there.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Our predictions for 2020, but Jonathan just predicted Highland getting bigger.
Well, I think they're going to be in Minecraft. I think they've got something with the video game. I think that's what I can say by now.
Interesting.
I think they may actually be avatars in a video game. Mm. And Vardruna, and you know, on the Vikings TV series, along with Vardruna. Vardruna, I think I've heard they may be scoring some kind of computer game as well too.
Prediction for 2020.
I predict Knotfest is going to be awesome.
That is a good one.
I predict that August is going to drive me absolutely round the bend, because that's now the fifth festival in a month. That when I saw
we
that,
we have
I just
to
thought,
cover it.
I predict that I'll need a huge bottle of sun cream to go to all the festivals and not burn.
I predict that Code Orange will do something really antagonistic that will probably wind people up with their album, and will make people go, "I can't believe they've done this." And that's what they'll do.
I've heard
absolutely nothing of it. I don't even know when it's coming out, but I predict they do something that will just be like, not what we're expecting. And I hope so too, Elle. I hope so too. What else is going to happen next year? I don't know. Hopefully Gajira will be back. That'd be nice.
Like to see Lamb of God as well.
Lamb of God being back. You know what? I predict, actually, and again, this is not based on anything, I predict Lamb of God are going to come back with a fucking good new album, because I feel like it's time for them to come out with something that reminds everybody why they are Lamb of fucking God. They've had a slight member lineup change, and I feel like those little tiny tweaks in the machine can often produce great results, and I'm hoping that'll be the case with them.
I already feel really excited just thinking about that.
Bring it.
And I think everyone's going to go more goth, which will make you happy.
Yes.
There's so much goth in the metal scene at the moment, like from goth to post punk. It's getting more and more widespread. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I am very happy with this development.
Bring on the goth revolution.
Yeah, because we're all kind of 80s kids, but it's that kind of goth post punk spinny Bauhausy thing. I'm all up for more of that in the metal scene.
Oh, and also I predict that the final ending of BoJack Horseman is going to break my heart.
Oh, God, yeah.
BoJack Horseman.
Think it is. It's what it does.
There's two seasons that I'm just close to the end now. What final episode of Watchmen and the final episode of Mr. Robot, because there's such a puzzle box narratives, but I get all the feels from Mr. Robot, especially saw the recent episodes, and I think that's going. Bojack Horseman's going to break my heart, and I'm just. I've got one more episode for Watchmen, and like a couple more, few more episodes for Mr. Robot. I'm going to be so bereft by the end of all of those. All
right. I also predict, hopefully, that Liverpool are going to bottle this Premier League.
But no way. No, we can't.
It's a hopeful prediction, but I'm sticking to it. That is it for the 2019 end of year special. It's been a hell of a year. Thank you so much to everyone that supported Metal Hammer through this year. We won the Magazine of the Year award, of course, at the Future Awards. It means so much to be able to stand up there and you know that people are appreciating what we do. We certainly appreciate you all back. And we're going to be hitting the ground running with a badass cover, or will that be covers, at the start of January. It's going to be awesome. And we promise we will continue to bring you the very biggest and best in the world of heavy metal. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll see you in 2020. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.